The idea of short back and sidewalks came about from a situation that we wanted to help another individual. So myself, being the founder, and the guys from the barbershop, we all met together and found out that we wanted to do a nice thing for another person. Each of us had our own sort of individual story to tell that surrounded alcoholism or drug abuse or mental health issues in our own families, and I think that we found out very early on that that would be the catalyst for the Short Back and Sidewalks program. My name is Craig Hollywood. I'm a DJ. I present a radio show. I work in civil engineering, and I've recently started a project which is a not-for-profit charity giving people who are homeless the ability to have a haircut free of charge and free of judgment. Spending my childhood in Glasgow, Scotland, it's a place that's quite rough and tough, and you know, it's quite bleak at times, and unfortunately there is a lot of problems on the streets, and especially coming from the area where I do come from, which is a place called Anderson, which is right outside just outside the city centre. There's a lot of poverty and people who are experiencing problems with alcoholism and, you know, broken families and things like that. And one thing that I do always say is the fact that I never really did come from that particular background. I was lucky enough to have an extremely loving family growing up, but unfortunately, you know, you didn't have to travel that far before you actually seen the examples of drug abuse or alcohol abuse. It's such a simple thing, having a haircut, walking down to pay your money, sitting down in the chair, and you always have that experience that you get treated a little bit differently, and the ability for someone to walk into a hairdressing salon or a barber shop and be made a little bit of a fuss of is something that, you know, we do take for granted. And unfortunately, with people who are living on the streets or living in a situation where every single penny that they have has got to go towards either food or maintaining some shelter or something like that, a haircut or your personal appearance kind of goes to right to the very back of the line. So we kind of thought that if we were able to give people who don't have that opportunity as much the opportunity to sit there and have a chat and be given a coffee or a sandwich or even just to be spoken to, like, we thought that that would just be something that would be a great catalyst for possible change. And the first person that we cut ever, a man called Godfrey, we rocked up to cut hair in a car park, and there was a guy already sort of sitting there waiting to have his hair cut. And because we'd never done it before, we felt a little bit apprehensive about going up to someone and saying, "Are you here for the haircuts?" Because they might not have been there for, you know, they might have been waiting for their wives in a shop, or they might have been standing waiting for a coffee. But luckily enough, Godfrey did come up to us and say, "Oh, I've travelled 35 km to come down to get my haircut." And we all kind of looked at each other, and that's when we turned around and went, "This is actually happening. This is real, you know." And yeah, the person who had come in particular was a guy who had previously had a really successful business with a family, and unfortunately now finds himself without the business, without the family, living in bushland up somewhere in Wanneroo outside of Perth. But we knew that if someone was willing to travel that far, and, you know, 35 km to get your haircut really does signify that how important it is to people. And, you know, we realized even before we'd even taken the scissors out that this is something that is really going to make a big, big difference to someone. I think I'm just kind of this eternal kind of pessimist in relation to, are people going to come? And, you know, we've done all this work and we've let everyone know and we've got all the barbers together and we've set everything together. And I think it's just one of those kind of situations where, you know, you have like a party and you invite everyone, and an hour before you're sitting there and no one's there and you're going, is anyone actually going to turn up, you know? And every time we do like a cutting event, it's almost like it's like your birthday, you know. And then you sit there and people start coming, and you know, it just makes all the difference. And I think because we know that it's actually helping people, but I suppose a lot of people probably don't realize it's helping us in a great way for people just to come, you know. The transformation is completely unbelievable. We can see our clients coming into the salon, you know, looking down at the floor and, you know, not really making much eye contact with anyone, not really talking with anyone. And then slowly, maybe once their hair's been washed and once one of the guys has asked them a little bit about their day, and the transformation goes then from being in that situation to people starting to crack jokes and people starting to tell stories about the fact that they've got a twin brother, or they used to live in Darwin, or they, you know, used to be a successful fisherman, or they're an artist. And then the next thing, people are then starting to check themselves out in the mirror and like run their hands through their hair and kind of got like a total swagger about their walk. And that's the thing. And that continues as well, like, because we've had feedback that when people have left the salon, they've been caught like looking at themselves in the mirror of the elevator, or when they've been going back to their accommodation, or, you know, talking about the fact that, you know, look at me, I've lost my mullet and, you know, I'm ready to take on the world, sort of thing. And, you know, that's the whole desired effect, is what we wanted to have done. As children, we were often confronted by people in general who were probably, you know, a bit off the beaten track, as you would say. You know, I can remember as a child all standing in the playground, and all the kids would be like, oh, look, the drunkie's here. And, you know, and we'd all be like running over to this fence and sort of standing and looking at this old drunk man kind of staggering across the road. And I think the contact, you know, it does happen from an extremely young age. And I think that's quite indicative of growing up in a place like Glasgow. One of the things that really does stick out for me in particular was something that my dad told us when I was probably about 4 or 5, and I still remember it. And he kind of said that no matter what anybody tells you about another person, just make sure that you make your own decision and you make your own mind up about someone, because what's told to you by another person doesn't necessarily mean that that's the truth. So if you meet another person, or if you meet a new person, then, you know, you find out for yourself. We used to find ways to probably have fun that were, unfortunately, probably when I look back now, I'm sitting there going, well, why the hell did we do that? But, you know, I remember, like, kind of very soon after that, it was maybe 15 or 16, or, you know, what I wanted to really do was to listen to music and to meet girls and to maybe have a beer or something like that. You know, like, I didn't want to be having to run away from the cops, or, you know, and unfortunately with a lot of our friends, it didn't stop for them, and they ended up dying as from heroin overdoses and, you know, unfortunately going to jail. And I remember, like, there was a point where I just said, I don't really want to be a part of that anymore. I started listening to music and I started playing guitar, and, you know, that was something that was very, very important to me at that age, because I would literally rather sit and play my guitar in my room than go out and cause trouble. And, you know, and eventually kind of that love of music and the intensity in which appreciated it formed a little bit of a sort of bridge away from all that sort of thing. The house and techno music is a very big passion of mine, and, you know, because it's huge in the UK, you know, electronic music, house music, techno music is like a religion. And I hadn't done a DJ show until I came to Australia, and it was something that was weird because you're so used to just doing it in your own house. And I was asked to play at like a big festival, and I remember I was completely out of my depth, and, you know, you're playing in front of like thousands of people. And I remember just being in that particular situation and kind of going, like, I'm completely not worthy to be here. And if I hadn't have been given that opportunity, I probably wouldn't have been able to do half the stuff that I've done. From day one, the Short Back and Sidewalks project itself has never set out to be a sob story, and also to be a charity that promotes a sense of humour, as opposed to perhaps maybe like making people feel uncomfortable or depressed or down in the dumps. So we always make a point of just treating people as if we would treat any other human being. And when someone sits down, it would be a case of, how's your day going? You know, the opportunity for a person who's living on the streets to have a, open quote, normal conversation, close quote, is absolutely priceless. And a lot of people, I don't think, from my experience of doing this, don't really realise the effect, and also the simplicity in basically walking up to another human being and saying, hi, how you going?